And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 30th, 2021. Well, we've been talking lately about a fossil fuel project that's being constructed in Peabody, Massachusetts. It's a what's called a peaker plant. Peaker plant being a funny name for a sort of special kind of fossil fuel electrical generation factory, but it only turns on when the demand for electricity is very high, right? So it's, as I say, it's this kind of specialized plant. The peaker plant in Peabody, there's so many peas running around in this, has recently been paused and will come back before the Department of Public Utilities, perhaps sometime in mid-June. But the peaker plant is a fossil fuel carbon dioxide emitter, right? It puts up carbon dioxide, and because of the nature of the peaker plant, it is called into service typically on days when it is the most hot, because that's when everyone has their air conditioner on, the demand is high. And of course, that's those hot days are when the emissions from a fossil fuel facility create the most damage in the local community. Anyway, there's a long Peabody, it turns out, has a peaker plant and has a bunch of other industrial heritage. Of course, Peabody goes back to, the name Peabody, Massachusetts is pretty old. It goes way back to colonial times, I think. So this is a town that's been around for a long time. It currently carries a lot of industrial facilities. Small town on the north shore of Boston, right on the water. Lots and lots of stuff that you don't particularly want. So the community's been heavily burdened over the past centuries by industrialization. And so now they're also proposed in Peabody to get a peaker plant, one more abuse of their sort of heritage. Anyway, that's a long story to say that there's a plant in Peabody being proposed. There's an organization called Community Action Works, which takes as its mission to confront polluters in a community with the voices of the people, help the people in the community that are already speaking, basically help them out. So it's interesting to explore what's going on in Peabody, who, what the stakes are, et cetera, et cetera. And because of that, we are thrilled to have with us Mireille Bajani, who is the Western Massachusetts Community Organizer for Community Action Works. Welcome, Mireille. How are you doing?
Hi, Ted. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Great. So I just told a story that has this industrial peaker plant proposal into a town that is already heavily burdened with industrial facilities. When did I get that story right? And tell me what's Community Action Works and what are you doing there with the people of Peabody?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. So to start with Community Action Works first, we are a regional nonprofit that works in the six states across the Northeast: Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And as you pointed out, we work with frontline communities to help them confront polluters. And that usually looks like Black, Indigenous, people of color communities, as well as poor and working class communities, because just like Peabody, they often experience a disproportionate amount of environmental burdens, impacts on their health, on their water, their land, their air. And we work side by side with them to help them design and implement campaigns that will win against big polluters. So you're right in the story of this plant. It's an additional source of air pollution and fossil fuel infrastructure in a working class community that has already dealt with a lot, and is honestly not needed as an additional source of carbon dioxide emissions when we're dealing with the climate crisis and we want to keep people's communities healthy for years to come. So when Community Action Works heard about this, we were immediately concerned. And this was probably back in early April. At the time, there wasn't much coming from Peabody in terms of concern or opposition. And we quickly realized that was because there wasn't any awareness. the residents of Peabody didn't even know that it was happening to have any feelings one way or the other about it. So the first step that I took in coordination with MCAN, which had already been kind of exploring the project, was to put some feelers out in Peabody, to post on social media, send out some emails, and see how the community felt, see if there was, if people were, you know, concerned about the impact this would have and wanting to organize against it. It pretty quickly became apparent that there was a core group of folks who were pretty strongly opposed to this proposed plant and wanted to do some things about it. From there, I supported those residents in forming the group Breathe Clean North Shore, who one of the leaders, Sudie Smaller, was on this podcast recently. Mm-hmm. And we've been working with those Peabody residents for the last 6 weeks.
Super, super. So can you like describe the existing, I mean, why is this peaker plant an insult to the sort of the livelihood of the town in terms of the things that are already there? I mean, it's my understanding is there are already several plants. So so people should know, Peabody sits on the North Shore. There's a river that goes through it called the Waters River. Exactly how it got that name, I don't know. But I mean, the Waters River. At one point, there's the Peabody Yacht Club. On the other side, like 100 yards away, is Route 128 or 95 Route 128, right? Very close, zooms very close by. And of course, historically, being close to the water, it's a very advantageous place to put kind of factories and whatnot. So, I mean, is that a fair description of Peabody as you found it?
Definitely, yeah. There's a lot of history of different industrial sites and some toxic sites, and actually on this very same plot of land where this new plant would be built is an existing plant. So it would be literally right next to an existing source of emissions and pollution, and right across the river from a hospital and within a few miles of a huge number of schools and residential communities and environmental justice communities recognized by the state of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And what's especially vexing about a peaker plant, some folks, you know, say, oh, it's not as bad because it only runs a few hours a year to meet that peak demand. But those hours that it runs are actually much more heavily polluting than a regular power plant because it has to start up and shut down every time it operates. And while it's starting up, it is 4 to 7 times as polluting as a regular plant. And so it generates a lot more pollution per unit of energy produced than a regular plant that's just running all the time. Right. And an example of this actually in another part of the state, some existing peaker plants over in Pittsfield, there's a large one there that's been running for decades and it only runs 5% of the year, but it generates 15% of the point source pollution in Berkshire County. It's the second largest polluter in the entire county, despite only running a number of hours per year. And we don't want that kind of thing in Peabody.
It's an interesting, the distinction to be made is there's, the carbon dioxide, which is the climate change aspect of what's being produced. But you're saying this 15% of the pollution, that we're now talking about this fine particulate, I think the word is 2.5 microns, or 2.5 PM stuff that is generated. And that's local. It's not global stuff. That's local pollution that happens right in the close to the plant, right?
Yeah, and I'm not a public health expert. We did have someone at our community meeting last night, Dr. Brita Lundberg from the Greater Boston Physicians for Social Responsibility, and she outlined all of the impacts that this plant would have in terms of health, including those fine particulates that are really problematic, that get into folks' lungs, mm-hmm. and as well as carcinogens and neurotoxins. All of those things are part of any kind of natural gas infrastructure, including peaker plants.
And it's my understanding as well, just in terms of the sort of burden on the community. So there's also what's called a compressor plant, which is a thing that would have to be built in conjunction with the peaker plant. And this thing called a compressor basically repressurizes the flow of natural gas. So if you think of the gas sort of like the water coming out of your faucet, this little compressor plant increases the pressure, so the water comes out faster, right? But that compressor plant is not benign either. That has emissions and does all sorts of additional bad chemicals that are around that are going most of the time. So it's interesting. So again, the burden on the site. This is all built into an existing site, and I guess I would point out, maybe would you agree that the example that you say that there's an existing peaker plant that is to be replaced, that peaker plant is 50, 60 years old now, right?
The one that's already on the Waters River.
Yeah, the one that's already there. And yeah, go ahead. I was going to say that represents the commitment that this compressor, this plant is to the future. I mean, 50 years from now is going to be 2071, right? And mm-hmm. that thing would still, we just can't have that, right?
Yeah, so the existing plant at the Waters River facility, some folks have suggested that it's going to be retired, but there's no evidence of that yet. No paperwork has been filed, no moves have been made. So we have to believe that these two plants will both be existing side by side. And as you pointed out, these plants have a long lifespan. And part of that is because it takes a long time to pay them off. It's a huge investment in terms of energy infrastructure and can take decades to recoup that, you know, to get your money's worth essentially on that investment. And I think part of it is also corporate interests and special interests holding on to the fossil fuel infrastructure that we have and keeping our grid tied to those systems. And so trying to keep these facilities online as long as possible. Mm. And, you know, and going back to, I keep using Berkshire County as a PowerPoint where these peaker plants have been around for a while and we're trying to close them. And two of the three peaker plants in Berkshire County have actually been around so long that they were grandfathered into the Clean Air Act and they don't have to apply for any air permits.
Really?
And so this, you know, that's an example of quite literally decade, you know, 60-year-old plants. And we just can't have this if we're building this new facility in Peabody in 2021 and it's going to be operating for 50 years. I can't imagine a world where having any fossil fuel infrastructure in 2070 would be a good idea or compatible with the direction our planet is heading in terms of the climate that we're facing.
I agree. So I guess let me come back to the question of the environmental, I'll say environmental injustice. And tell me, I mean, can you, for people who may not be aware, how is an environmental justice community sort of defined and what does it mean, right? So there are school kids living, there are schools there, there's hospital. I mean, that's bad enough to have in near a plant. But then the environmental justice communities are sort of a separate concept, right?
Yes, definitely. So environmental justice, it can mean a lot of things in different contexts. Right. It's generally the idea that certain communities are disproportionately impacted by environmental and public health burdens. And historically and currently, those communities tend to primarily be communities of color and lower income communities. And in Massachusetts, there is an official definition of what an environmental population is, certain criteria that a community meets. And the state government has a map that it updates with all the communities that fit that criteria. Mm-hmm. So for example, median household income is a criteria. Folks who are not white, people of color in strong, you know, high percentages mm-hmm. of folks of color in groups. And also language barriers are another criteria, whether folks speak English or are isolated due to language barriers.
The classic example of that, if I could jump in, is the Chelsea substation, which was, mm-hmm. I think there was a hearing held in English where most of the populations didn't have English as a first language, mostly Spanish. And it just, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like absurd, right? Okay. And so those communities exist in Peabody.
There are a number of, if you pull up, I've looked at the map a few times, the state map of environmental justice communities, and there are a bunch of them scattered across Peabody and Danvers within about a 2-mile radius of the plant. If I remember correctly, there mm-hmm. are seven different communities somewhere in that range that are marked on that map. And this is going to be increasingly important as the Baker administration implements more of the recent climate legislation related to environmental justice. The climate bill that was passed at the end of March includes a few provisions related to environmental justice communities in terms of projects that are proposed there, what kind of process they have to go through to get approved, what kind of outreach needs to be done in terms, you know, for accessibility, like what you were saying in terms of language access. And also a really key piece is cumulative impact, where once this bill fully goes into effect, regulatory processes will need to take into account not just, okay, here's this new plant that we want to build, here's what it's going to emit, here's how it's going to impact the community, but really laying that on top of here's the baseline the community is operating with in terms of other sources of pollution, other burdens, and this is how this plant is going to add to that. And that is something that is really going to be increasingly critical for things like this plant and other projects in environmental justice communities, because nothing exists in a vacuum. Every new piece of infrastructure or project that we build feeds into an existing ecosystem of air pollution, water pollution, communities interacting. And so taking into account those intersections is going to be really important.
Interesting. So tell me, what's going on in Peabody? What, if someone wants to help, what can they do? How do they make contact with the events there so that they can be part of it if they want to?
That is a great question. Always very excited to get more folks involved. The Breathe Clean North Shore community group is a new group of Peabody residents that formed in the last few weeks, and they are really geared towards stopping this plant in the short term and in the long term, moving the North Shore towards more renewable energy, a more resilient, sustainable, and transparent future in terms of interactions with decision makers. Mm-hmm. And they are thrilled to have new members. So folks can check out breathecleannorthshore.org. And
all one word, breathe clean.
All North one Shore. Word.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then the email address is breatheclean.ns@gmail.com. And the group is meeting on a pretty regular basis. Usually it's been Tuesday evenings. So if you shoot an email to that email address, one of the community members can let you know when the next meeting is.
Interesting. And so I guess I would point out that this is not simply, to draw back from Peabody. So people may be interested in this. They may not live in Peabody, but the implications of what you're doing are much bigger, right? No one should feel as if they are immune, right? You tend to say, well, Peabody, it's so far away. But no. I mean, this stuff can come. My own town here had a pipeline that was proposed to be put through, right? No one's immune, and Peabody is closer than you think. So even if you're not necessarily in Peabody, you may be wanting to follow these events and help out. So it's Breathe Clean North Shore. Tell me what the community action – I'm sorry. Yeah, the Community Action Works website is where? If people want to look at that?
Yeah, our website is communityactionworks.org, and folks can find a lot more information about what we do in general across the region, some of the other campaigns we're working on, as well as a lot of resources for basic organizing. If you're looking to get something going in your own community, we have some toolkits and resources on our website on how to make a website and how to work with social media and build a group and lots of other skills.
Yeah, I think that's great, because it can be intimidating if this big corporate thing steps into your town and you're just one little person, right? So looking to the help and infrastructure that Community Action Works can offer is an important thing. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, our mission statement is that, you know, environmental threats are big, but the power of well-organized community groups is bigger. And so just getting together with a few neighbors even can make a huge difference.
Well, what we will do is I'll put up links to these things on the show notes, which will be held in on the blog area of the Mass Climate Action Network website. Okay. And that'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. And there's a SoundCloud link to the show. Of course, we'll also post the show on all the modern podcast distribution apps. So you can get it through Stitcher, Google, Apple, all those other kind of places. If you have an idea about what we should be discussing in the show, send us a link to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what's good, what's bad, and what's interesting for you. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. It keeps us apprised of all the ongoing stuff. We want to close you where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Marie, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.